to me, the biggest thing right now is that I think we are in the most exciting time for design education and design in general. And the reason being is I feel like design education totally missed the boat on web design, but static web design, meaning, you know, before the iPhone and then really before responsive web design came out in 2010, it was static and it was really no different than designing for a poster or a business card. Design education has a chance to like be the leader of the design discipline instead of just, you know, like playing catch up. And that's the negative side of the state is that we are still kind of, I think a lot of programs are still stuck in print only and they haven't embraced that yet.
Welcome to the Designed Podcast. Today's guest, Gary Rosanz. Gary is an assistant professor of graphic design at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and the education director for the AIGA Baltimore. Gary received his BA in graphic design from Cleveland State University and his MFA in visual communications from the University of Arizona. Gary researches the best practices for teaching interactive and user experience design, specifically finding the ideal balance of visual design, user experience, and front-end development skills for the emerging interactive designer. His research evolves into interviews with design practitioners to determine, contextualize, and prioritize these competencies and is distributed via Gary's award-winning podcast series, Design EDU Today. Gary has presented his research and findings at international and national peer-reviewed conferences, including AIGA's biannual national conference, Head, Heart, Hand, and the International Conference on Design Principles and Practices, as well as many other conferences. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy our conversation. Gary, welcome to the Designed Podcast. How are you?
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, and I'm doing good.
Excellent.
Hanging in there. It's the end of the semester.
Yeah. I think we're all wrapping that up as we head into May here and looking for a comp summer. Are you teaching over summer?
No.
Yeah. I'm going to do a few foundations courses actually over summer. I've been doing those here and there in Spotty, so I kind of enjoy that.
I like foundations courses. I've taught them before.
Oh, it's a blast. It really is. It gives you a little bit of break from all that intensive design concept and stuff. So
yeah.
Briefly tell me a little bit about your path to and through academics, if you will.
Sure. I kind of pride myself on the fact that I did everything like way out of order. So I was working for a diskette duplication company, and I'm the one who figured out how to do the pre-press to get the labels, you know, get the artwork on the labels. And so I was doing pre-press production, and I was doing, you know, like some custom designs for clients here and there. Then I just started going to the community college because they were paying for it. And I eventually got canned and I said, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, I didn't have a portfolio, so I couldn't get a job because I was just doing, you know, 99% pre-press.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I went to, you know, I knocked out my associates and then I got my, at the same time, in like three semesters, I got my bachelor's, but I met my undergrad professor, Jennifer Visacchi O'Grady, and she was just, I mean, she inspired me to like teach, but, and I was like, look, so she's doing freelance work. She's teaching, you know, I like this thing that she's going. So I ended up moving to Arizona, going to University of Arizona and getting my MFA, but I had student teaching opportunities there.
Okay.
And so that's what really is like, this is it. This is what I enjoy doing.
Oh, that's fantastic.
More. And so then, you know, like everybody else, after you graduate, you just, you know, you go to jobs until, my first job I really loved at Truman State. But you know, it was 2008, stock market crashing and, you know, like the housing market bubble and nobody could like guarantee, and I was a new position. I was first year, new line.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And like nobody could say, hey, the line is safe.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I got to apply for jobs. And so I had a chance and I moved to Chicago, met my wife and we wanted to be closer to family. So now I'm at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
That's fantastic, actually.
So that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All backwards.
All right. So how long you been over at the University of Baltimore, Maryland then?
This is my sixth year. I just put in my tenure application back in September.
Oh, that's fantastic. Maybe I'll have to have you back on the podcast at another time to talk about the tenure process. So many new design educators, as they head into teaching design and then are welcome to the tenure process, it's a little bit of a different world for sure.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, to me, having gone through it, like gone through the 3-year review process at Columbia College and then, you know, starting over when I came to UMBC by choice, I was able to approach it so much more strategically.
Exactly. Right.
That exactly. I think it's much more manageable if you kind of have a long-term plan for it.
Yeah, I agree. So what I'm trying to accomplish on these early episodes of the Design Podcast, I'm calling them the prologue episodes, right? So before we really get into the weeds and start talking about some heavy topics in design, I want to kind of get the idea of the state of design education. So could you reflect a little bit on what you think is the state of design education?
I could talk about that for hours.
Okay.
But to keep it brief, the biggest thing right now is that I think we are in the most exciting time for design education and design in general. And the reason being is I feel like design education totally missed the boat on web design, but static web design. Meaning, you know, before the iPhone and then really before responsive web design came out in 2010, it was static and it was really no different than designing for a poster or a business card because you had fixed dimensions and you had all this stuff. But now, I mean, I literally look at the interactive design profession as it's 2009. You could say like by 2011, everything was, that's when, you know, media queries and, was ubiquitous across all the browsers. So we're looking at a profession that's 8 years old.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So now design education can either, you know, have the choice. It could either, you know, just like play, you know, sit back and play catch up, or it could actually lead and become like, hey, this is what's the best practice. Because the profession's still trying to figure that out.
Oh, really?
Itself. Yeah. I mean, just from me doing my podcast, I did find a lot of, you know, professionals were listening because they wanted to know what other, you know, people were doing. I mean, if you look at like web design events, like an event apart, I mean, all of those are like, hey, this is a new process. Dan Malls, you know, really into the process. So is Brad Frost, Jen Simmons, all these people are just like, you know, like parsing out like what's like an efficient way to design for, you know, for the profession. So that's why I think it like ultimately like design education has a chance to like be the leader of like of the design discipline instead of just, you know, like playing catch up. Okay, And so that's the negative side of the state is that we are still kind of, I think a lot of programs are still stuck in print only. And they haven't embraced that yet.
So do you think there's a bridge? I know your background is in screen, but there's also 3D, right? There's modeling, there's animation, 3D graphics and stuff like that. Is that separate or is that part of it? I'll get into that question a little bit more in a minute here, but you know, is that included in your thoughts and conversation?
Yes and no. Okay. Not from a creation of a visual image. No. Okay. I've never really thought about that. But from a UI, from a user experience perspective, yeah, I think about that a lot because I just think of like, oh, that would be like, you know, augmented reality, like, you know, being able to overlay a map when you're, you know, walking around with your phone. So I've thought about it and like how it can enhance the user experience, but I've never like thought about it as like, how would I design it?
Okay.
And what the visuals really look like.
Okay. So let me lead you into this question then. 4D. I know our department has just started a discussion on 4D and our inclusion of that and where it fits both in foundations and in the upper level core.
And haven't thought about that at all.
Okay.
Curricularly. No, yeah. And seriously, we haven't, because I'm fighting the battle of I've chosen to be, let's be the leaders in like responsive web design. So that's where I've been putting my energies and efforts into.
Well, I would think when it comes to that user experience, you know, some of that 4D, that fourth dimension of time and motion, can really add a little bit to that. I know I heard one of your other conversations on your podcast, Design EDU Today, where you guys had a small discussion on things that were moving on the page and how that works out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just a missed opportunity. It's a totally missed opportunity, because who's designing that experience right now?
Right.
It's more or less developers, because they have the quickest path to making something move on the screen. And do they have the training to do it?
Exactly.
I don't know.
So then what about this question? Print versus digital.
So if you look at all the jobs, at least in the cities, I mean, because I understand, you know, so you're in Arkansas, you may have a different regional profile, but from my time in Arizona, Illinois, Ohio, Maryland, it's predominantly like 99.9% interactive web, app, whatever.
Okay.
And so my knee-jerk reaction is like, why the hell aren't we totally teaching 100% digital? But then I stop and I like have to like, you know, then like stop, breathe, think.
Yeah.
Well, all these people are getting jobs. So what we're doing in print is translatable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we shouldn't throw out print, but I think we have to kind of like seriously like curate it and figure out how much of that print is necessary. And so, for example, you know, how many posters does a student now need in their portfolio?
Right.
I mean, so the objective of, at least for me, for a poster is scale, because they're designing on the screen and then they print it and put it on the wall and it's, whoa, what happened to my design? It doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
What message is this thing telling? So do they need to like perfect that skill, or do they just need to now be introduced into that skill? And do they need to spend their time, you know, perfecting, like you said, like the 4D, like how does a page animate in?
Sure. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do we place content in the F pattern readability for things? So I think the emphasis needs to be a total shift.
Okay.
Where I think most programs now, you know, they introduce web here and there and everything's still heavy print, where I think it needs to be the opposite.
So before I talk a little bit more about, so responsive web is kind of your area of expertise, but design for screen is a whole area in itself. Is that somewhere that you're looking for growth? Is that somewhere that design programs should be considering beyond web, or is it cross media? I don't know.
One example that I love eBooks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know people still love the printed book, but I don't like the clutter of the books. I mean, I just don't. So I would rather have eBooks, and they're terrible. They're just designed terribly. And they don't have to be. Yeah, there's some limitations, but, and then the other, I mean, so then some ebooks are just glorified PDFs. And unless you have like the iPad, the 12-inch iPad Pro, which I'm luckily I do. I mean, because trying to look at it on your phone, trying to like read it on anything else is just terrible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, I don't think eBooks are going away. And I think that's just something that we should be encouraging a lot, instructing. Yeah.
Well, before I forget, I wanted to go back where you're talking a little bit about print versus digital. Mm-hmm. Does digital take any cues from print, or is it completely a different approach? You know, are there cues that we've learned from print and design education for print that's carrying through?
So on a process-wise, no, I think it's a different process.
Okay.
Because the fact that the poster has got two scales. The poster as on the screen, and then as when you hang it on the wall. That's it.
Okay.
So since the screen-based design, whether it's an ebook, whether it's an app, whether it's a website, is going to have a billion different scales.
Okay.
So the process to designing like all these different scales is different. And you can't follow like a traditional print model and still be as effective. But fundamentals, I think scale, like hierarchy, is the same. And that definitely doesn't change. And I think for the most part, except with some, I would say the typography essentially is more or less the same. There's some like slight differences, but they're slight. And I think that's easily translatable. And hence why I think students are doing so, you know, are finding from print heavy.
Yeah.
Conceptually, it's the same. You know, the conceptual thinking is the same.
So principles,
yeah,
those kind of stay the same.
Color theory is applicable to the same.
So it comes down mostly to, you know, we talk about typography being, you know, those rules still apply. The format changes enough because we can't control format. That it's more about the usability and the user experience. So would that be the areas that you think are, that we have to approach differently than print, right?
No, I think print should take the cue from web and think about accessibility and usability of poster. I mean, for example, I mean, I think that's the other way. That's one of the ones that print needs to embrace.
Yeah, small little pieces. I actually, when I have students in graphics one creating a poster, it's the first time they're ever making anything that scale. I actually challenge them, how can this become a user experience with a print poster? And they kind of turn their head and look at me kind of funny, but I'm like, well, could it be? So I kind of lead into that with that. So
I mean, just like simply, where's the poster? Is it going to be viewed? Is it going to be stapled to a telephone pole?
Yeah.
Or is this thing, you know, like sitting in the subway system or on a bus, you know, like stop?
Exactly. Exactly.
And so it's, that needs to be, you know, like addressed. But back on the principles though, so I'm going to use typography. Like, so where are the principles different? So I'll let you decide because I don't have an answer to this.
Okay.
But this is how they're different. So when you're designing a book or a poster, the scale of the typography stays the same. It doesn't change. But when you go from a website on a 27-inch iMac to your phone, the scale of the typography needs to change.
Right, right.
And is that a change in principle? Or is that just, you know, I don't quite know where to throw that
I think I'd respond by saying it will use the same principles, but the principles have to adjust per format, per medium, for sure. Yeah.
It's little quirky things like that.
No, yeah, definitely. This, the nuances that you have to consider about the differences in the two. How about this question? Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, you're ready. Art and design or art versus design? How do they work together? Do they work together?
They definitely work together, but I do see a distinction.
Okay.
And I'm going to use an anecdote from one of my colleagues. And she's from the, she's a from the print days, used to worked for Knopf Publishing. Like, she's a fantastic book designer. And I've like, I hear her use the term graphic artist.
Okay.
And she's heavily into image making. She is about image making. Whereas, and so that, I mean, and so the work that she does is like, you need art. You need to understand all the arts to make that graphic image. But when you're making a website, it's not the same. It's not the same as that.
Right.
So, you know, you can't kind of take an artistic image making approach to a banking website because you may be excluding you're not thinking about accessibility. So there's so many other considerations, and it's a different thought process to me.
I agree.
And ultimately, I think that's fundamentally where the difference is just, are you an image maker? And I mean, I think like the gig posters.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's artistic, and you need to have like artistic ability to like make those. That's not so maybe websites will get to that point where they can do that and still be fully accessible. And I don't know.
Let's take a jump back then and kind of connect that to the state of design education. I'm thinking about titles of programs. So currently I'm at the Department of Art. Mm-hmm. There's no design attached to that, but we have graphic design.
Yeah.
And now we have the inclusion of a great faculty member into our program that came over from our film school, and he's going to be working primarily in new media and 4D. So my suggestion and a conversation that's going to come about will be, what is that called? Are we still putting him into graphic design? So, I mean, over the years, communication arts, graphic arts, visual communication, graphic design. Yeah. Do we need a new term for what we do?
I'm not one for titles. I don't really care. I call myself a designer, and I call my, a friend who's an architect, I call her a designer.
Okay.
So to me, it's all the same. So purely from a marketing standpoint, I hate the term visual communicator. To me, that sounds like you're just trying to justify that you're more than just a graphic designer.
Okay. Yeah.
You're trying to, and I don't know how that term came about. But from a purely like marketing standpoint, just call it graphic design. That's the term I think, like recruiting students understand that term.
I think parents as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I could be wrong. I mean, I haven't done a survey, but that's how I would approach it. I would literally like just survey, what do you call web design? What do you call logo design? What do you call branding?
Yeah.
And I would use that term.
I gotcha. Okay. Have you come across any, and I'll put it in quotes, web designers that would be offended by graphic design, or anyone that's in new media as a graphic designer?
The ones that get offended, they like, well, I haven't met anybody who is offended.
Oh, that's good.
Personally.
Good.
But I have seen discussions, and the one term that really makes sense to me, and I understand why, but it's confusing, and I'll also explain that, is product design.
And I've heard that a lot lately too. And I'm like, well, define that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they're making a product. So they look at the banking website. They're looking at, their like to-do app, how many like thousands of like services are online now, like time trackers, these things.
Sure.
They're not making a website. They're making a product or a service. And so I've also heard the term service design, but more product.
Okay.
And so I totally get it, because you're not making a artifact, you're making a service or product. The only problem I have with it is because I've traditionally, when I hear the term product, I think industrial design. Yeah, so I exactly, think yes. toy, car, it but usually, they're making products.
Yeah, but it usually has a tangible item yeah. that it's related to. That's why I think yeah. the service design, but then service design is different because it's got a whole different genre of application, yeah. stuff like that.
So I understand yeah. the argument for it because they are doing, they're not just making a logo.
Right, right. They're creating an entire product.
Yes.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense. But yeah. again, right, for us have been around pre-online, pre-digital, you know, yep. a product is a little bit different. So foundations then, right? Mm-hmm. So we all have to start learning from the ground up. Okay.
Yep.
And foundations is critical. And a lot of students in their freshman year are even kind of wondering, why do I have to do this? I just want to get in and do the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. So what would you consider untouchables in the foundations that just have to be there? They're staples. And what can we do differently?
Well, okay. Can I define that? Just for a little context.
Sure. Please.
Foundations in an art and design program or a foundations in a graphic design for graphic design only?
Wow. Okay. That's a really good question. I am in an art program with a design emphasis. So our foundations have to consider all arts.
Yeah.
So, and I think I've seen a lot of programs going back to the state of design education that are moving away from being singular, like we're a graphic design program, to merging back into the fine arts. I've seen that a lot lately. So before we talk more about the foundations, have you heard much on that?
No, that's actually kind of new to me. So just to kind of rephrase the question. So that like literally you've seen like design programs kind of like collapsing back in, like a standalone design program is kind of like rebranding as an art.
Not necessarily in that manner, but more so where they've had two separate departments. There's the art department, and then there's like a visual communications or a design program.
Huh.
Kind of what I've seen, it's happened over the last four to 5 years that I've heard people talking about it, had conversation with people over it, have seen the changes in the new departments coming out. But it was more related to, in my personal experience as well, it was more related to some of the arts departments having enrollment concerns. You know, they were less students than they typically had. A program that I taught at as a lecturer, their design students dropped drastically. So the programs that are finding themselves a little bit wavering with enrollment and under some situations there, I see they're starting to bring those two separate programs back under one roof.
Now, okay, that makes perfect sense if you kind of look at, so the last of the millennials has graduated.
Right.
There's not a lot of 18-year-olds. So there's not a lot of college age students like there were. So we're in a trough until I think until the millennials kids starts coming back up, and that's not going to be until like 2025, 2026. Mm-hmm. We're still quite a ways away from that. So we're going to have, so like every institution's going to be struggling with enrollment because there's just less kids.
Okay.
Period. And so they're going to have to find their own way to ride out that storm.
Right. Right.
So that makes perfect sense.
So then in context, let's just, talk about the foundations then for design.
Okay.
And stay on that track.
Okay. If it was just design, I think one of the untouchable. I can only think of like things that I question the value of.
Okay.
And I want to say this one's going to be tough and I'll just outright say it. I question if I've got, okay, if I have, I'm going to say in an art and design program, I have one type of drawing. Well, maybe two.
Okay.
Still life and life drawing.
Correct. Right.
And that's it. I think actually kind of like architectural rendering would be a much better tool for graphic designers if they're not going to have any other type of drawing.
Okay.
Because they need to, I mean, what is the kind of drawing that graphic designers need to do? Quick abstractions. So like, you know, maybe like the quick gesture drawings in life drawing would be good to like quickly learn like abstraction, but you know, spending a lot of time like doing a still life, does that teach abstraction? Like, does that teach the right kind of drawing that a designer needs?
I would agree with that. I think that's a great conversation. Proportion, scale,
yeah.
Structure. Yeah, those are things they typically don't get in those traditional drawing
classes. Yeah, and so is traditional drawing valuable? Oh, heck yeah.
Right.
And they should do it. But I'm wondering if that's truly foundational drawing.
That's a great point. I like that.
So that one I wrestle with a lot. Color, I mean, some programs don't do it, and some I've noticed this in my program. Because we're actually, you know, in the process of doing an asset accreditation.
Okay.
And we're doing our self-assessment. And I was looking at color, and my students can come up with these like beautiful color palettes, but their application of the color palette is awful. It's like so systematic. They pick like one place to put color and they just like swap out the different colors in the palette. There's like no exploration of like, okay, let's look at it on this background of like, you know, this color, let's look at it on this color. Let's like, yeah. So like the application of a color palette is sorely missing. And I'm just thinking of, you know, just of places when I've taught foundations, and I think that is a the pairing of colors and the app in the beginning of application of color. That to me, it should be foundational.
Okay. So they're understanding color schemes.
Yes.
So they're understanding, you know, they're monochromatic, analogous, mm-hmm. you know, complementary, and so on and so forth, but
yep.
not necessarily the theory. So perhaps they need to yep. develop more color theory, psychology of color.
Yes.
Kind of yeah. some Joseph Elbers kind of level
yes.
stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And so that's one.
Okay. I mean, that
and,
might.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that might be enough unless you got, you know,
oh,
another
balance, yeah. balance. That is like that one can't, and because they don't apply it enough. And by balance, I mean like asymmetrical, like radial, symmetrical, like golden mean, golden ratio. I mean, because they learn it. Mm-hmm. I know they learn it. But,
right. Right.
But they don't. But it's not applied to like the grid. So it's not yeah. applied to layout. So when they're making their layouts, I notice, again, they always default to symmetrical.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like asymmetrically, you learn that asymmetrical balance is like just more engaging and it.
Right. I found that too. They've definitely been able to identify the terms, right?
Yeah.
So they know, oh, that's asymmetrical, that's symmetrical. I've even been talking to students about abstract symmetrical and they get that, but they're not understanding the reason that balance is there. So mm-hmm. we start talking more about space and mass and volume and what's being used. So, yeah, I think a little more in-depth stuff on that would probably be very helpful.
And so I literally think like, you know, after I think like if this is a joint foundations program, I think what's missing in that is I think they all do the balances. But like then to say, OK, now I'm going to give you a photo. I'm going to give you a headline and I'm going to give you some text, lay that over so it physically traces the pattern of your asymmetrical balance.
Oh, sure. That's a neat way to approach that.
So this, they don't have to master it. They just do it once. And then, you know, I think then the layout, you know, is really the responsibility of like, you know, upper level design courses, but I just, yeah. so they make that connection.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, they need to see the initial connection.
Right, and then in, like you said, upper level, when things start getting responsive and that mm-hmm. asymmetrical layout shifts, you know, mm-hmm. they've got to be able to respond to the responsiveness. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So design curriculum, where do you mm-hmm. think we'll be in 1 year, 5 years, maybe even 10 years?
10 years, I think we'll be there. Because I'm going to use myself as an example.
Geez, is 10 years too late? I mean, you talked about how we missed the boat kind of earlier in the 90s with web, but we all know academia moves slow, but.
Yeah. Well, why does it? It doesn't have to. I don't know.
Yeah.
See, and that's where I was kind of go with that one is myself. I never took a class in web design, but I took it upon myself to teach myself HTML, CSS, a little bit of JavaScript, a little bit of PHP.
Right. Right.
I have no idea if I'm doing that to best practices.
Okay. Yeah.
Where I think the incoming, the people who are graduating now are learning, maybe learning best practices in, at some places they're
correct.
They're either creating the best practices in interactive screen based design, or they are learning them. And so in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to have the baby boomers who are going to have fully retired. And you're going to have this influx of young people.
Right. Yeah.
And the Gen Xers are going to be the old, the old guard.
So in 10 years, we'll be there. I mean, that's What about the 1 year from now? What's most important 1 year?
I think most important 1 year is that. So for somebody who's done only print, they need to find like maybe just one project in their all print class that they can like maybe instead of doing the traditional, like, okay, here's a 2-page magazine spread. Why don't you do a 2-page magazine spread in print and then do one, you know, like what does it look like mobile? And then what does it look like on desktop?
Okay. And that comes into the discussion of, I think a lot of educators need to understand that they don't need to have their students develop or program those websites, right?
Yeah. Just do it in XD, Adobe XD. I prefer Sketch, but
yeah,
whichever one.
Okay. 5 years then.
5 years, I think, at that point, that's when I think you're going to have all the new influx of MFA grads who are graduating in a year, graduating in 2 years, are going to be, you know, getting into the program and starting to. Yeah,
they're just going to be getting in. Bring their experiences in mm-hmm. into the study. Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I just had another question.
And I think the industry is still, because we got to still address that. The industry hasn't figured itself out yet, at least for screen-based.
Okay. Yeah. Is there room for discussion on things such as kiosks, those little Visa things that we use every day for our debit cards, in cars? I seen the other day standing in the customer service line, to my left was a rug doctor. And it had a video playing with a touch screen. And then on my right, oh goodness, I also can't remember exactly what it was, but it was another one of those. Here's a product, here's a screen, here's everything. There's a video playing, touch screen on both, so that you could go through and mm-hmm. actually even then pay for those rental tools and walk away with them. So
yeah, I am not making this up. So about 2 years ago, I teach, it's called advanced interface. But essentially I just teach like the user experience where they go out, I make them do a series of tasks and then they like find a problem and then they create a solution to that problem. And it has to be a screen-based solution. 9 out of 10 want to design an app.
Okay.
And we do, and then they design their app based on this, you know, what their findings were, you know, just the mock-up version. You know, there's obviously no coding. But one girl, woman, she didn't say girl, she designed an interactive kiosk for bus stops.
Oh, wow.
'Cause I made them ride the buses. And she's like, okay, in the Inner Harbor of Baltimore, there's all these like tourist things to do, but how do you find them? And so she designed this one. I am not kidding. Like literally about a week ago, the city actually is starting to do that. They've implemented a couple of them. It is identical to what she did like 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
And I did, I just sent it to her. And she's like, oh my God, that's mine.
Oh my.
I'm all for that. I want student, but I think we're going to have to, if we want that to be the focus of the students, we need to tell them that, because they just gravitate to, they want to design an app.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they don't have the life experiences. Like, come on, they're 18, 20, 22. How many of them have been in an inner city where they need that they've been to, and how many of them even been to the airport? They need this stuff.
Right. And that's even more prominent or dominant in my area. So yeah, I'm really close to Little Rock. Our university is not in Little Rock. We're about 30 minutes outside in a little town called Conway. Beautiful little community. We have a great university, beautiful campus, doing some really awesome things. Our students are interning all over the nation. We have one in New York City right now. We have one next over the summer is actually heading abroad to do his internship. So we're doing really, really great things. But our students don't have that, you know, metropolis experience. Little Rock is a decent sized city. There's no doubt about that. We've got the modern day stuff as well. Some of our students come from some very rural ranch and farming areas. So a lot of those conversations and experiences they haven't had. So that's important.
Yeah. And I do notice a difference, and I'm going to sort of knock my Maryland students, because Baltimore has a stigma and I love it. I live in the city. But people are like the students are like afraid of the big bad city in Baltimore.
Yeah. Yep.
And so they're kind of commuters. They come from beautiful Chesapeake, Maryland, these beautiful suburbia. And I made them ride the bus, and that scared the bejesus out of them. But whereas when I was teaching in Chicago, you hop on the L, take a bus, you don't care because it's easier.
Right.
And the work is definitely different because of the life experiences of students.
Yeah. So that's a great segue into my next question for you then. So if you had the opportunity, what advice would you give design educators to better prepare their students during their academic journey and then obviously post-graduation as well?
You know, I literally just thought of one when I was listening to you talk about if you're in a rural community.
Yeah.
Because in Truman State, literally draw a triangle to connecting Des Moines, Kansas City, and St. Louis. Stick your finger in the middle of that triangle. You are 3.5 hours away from each one of those. And that's Truman.
Oh, okay.
So in hindsight, the students, they would always go to Chicago. They would go to St. Louis. They'd always do some kind of once a year field trip. I would tie that into projects. Literally, if you're in a rural community, get a bus and make them go to some place they are uncomfortable with. Vice versa in the city.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Go to the country. Do some stuff that makes you uncomfortable if you're not used to trees.
A friend of mine introduced me to another friend of mine, and his family are farmers. And this is up in Indiana. And the amount of technology on their farming tractors in the field was absolutely remarkable. I was stunned. And they have user interfaces and lots of electronic screens in those in those tractors. So yeah, it's really interesting. What are the needs of the people? What's the need, right? The user experience, and how does that change, as we go around it?
Yeah. And so then, and on a kind of more practical scale, maybe just for educators, because I have one colleague, and she's totally print, but she embraced. So now she has the students in her, in her typography class, she has them use Adobe XD, makes them look at the typography on their phone, by simply plugging in a cord. And, she has no web experience, but she's brave enough. And she's like, I'm going to do this.
That's awesome.
And so I think, faculty who are predominantly in one camp need to break out of that camp.
That's good advice. I appreciate that.
Because it's not hard.
Yeah. No, not really.
And it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, you know what, you just have to trust like the fact that like you're not going to be perfect at it.
Exactly. And I think my approach to that is I always talk with students, hey, I'm not the expert. I'm learning as well as you guys are. So I know enough, you know, obviously to help you through it and so on and so forth, you know, in the right language. But then you let them know, let's learn something together. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I tell them all the time. Yeah. And I think full disclosure, because I tell them, look, my research is, you know, is not like designing a website every day. I am not a full-time practicing designer. I'm a full-time educator.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm going to, you know, there's some questions that I can't answer.
Exactly.
I can only like, you know, make a educated guess.
Yep.
So I tell them.
It's been a great conversation.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. And there's more conversation to come. You know, I think this is the,
sounds good.
This is the prologue that I'm looking for to get the discussion started so that, we can all continue to have that conversation and creating success in design education. So it's going to be fun. I appreciate you being here on my first episode, kicking things off. That's fantastic. Just to let people know, you've been a great supporter of helping me get started.
Well, my pleasure.
And giving me that little bit of confidence boost that we need to get things rolling here. So
there's another final piece of advice.
Okay.
Open source. For the love of God. I mean, I think academics hide stuff. I think all my materials, everything is online. I'm, like I said, I freely give you that stuff because everybody should share. I mean,
I agree.
It's simple as that, you know?
Yeah. In the old school, design faculty, it was, you know, untouchable. This is, you know, what I do is my secret. So yeah, it's beautiful to see more of the open source and more of that open discussion. So, before I let you go, is there anything that you're doing, working on, that you want to let people know about?
Sadly, if you've looked at the podcast, it's been in hiatus. And that was literally because I was putting together my tenure application.
Yeah.
And now I'm associate chair and now we're applying for NASAD. So my research has suffered, but the podcast isn't going away. I do have some ideas with it, where I want to, I recently did a survey and some of the survey results were kind of based on generating more content that can be used.
Okay.
So right now, you know, we're just like listening and talking, but how do we apply that to the classroom? And so that's where I kind of want to take it is, all right, how do I take what I learned? Some of these things that I think are what are going to be best practices and make them like concrete.
Oh, that'll be exciting.
So that's the next step, but I've also got my wife and I are expecting, you know, at the end of May 30th, so about 3 weeks away.
Oh, wow. That's
so
awesome.
So who knows? So I got a hunch that I'm not going to be doing much over the summer.
Oh, well, congratulations anyhow. Yeah,
so thanks.
Yeah. Well,
but it's going to get there.
We'll look forward to it.
Back on track.
Yeah, we'll look forward to it when it comes out. Where can people follow you and your work?
So right now, if you just went to GaryRozance.com, that'll take you to Design.edu today. I also published a book in December on, you know, how I teach my students responsive web design. And so you can find the link to that book also on that there. It's a good distribution hub.
Great.
Yeah, you go GaryRozance.com, easy enough.
Right, and we can go everywhere from there.
Yep, exactly.
Perfect. All right, Gary, it's been great having you. Thank you for joining me on the Design Podcast today. And we're going to keep creating success in design education. That'll be
awesome.
Sounds
awesome.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Yep. You too.
All righty. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining me on this episode. The Designed Podcast website is located at thedesignedpodcast.com. There you can find notes on the episode, links to our guests, links to resources, and more regarding the many things discussed during each show. If you find the Design Podcast interesting and informative, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast service. You can also follow The Designed Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and subscribe to our video version of the podcast on YouTube. Please join us for the next episode of The Designed Podcast, and let's continue to create success in design education.